bottom line is just a recognition in my guts that everything that had gone before on this question was just plain wrong, and by which I mean that the continued refusal on the part of then Prime Minister John Howard to deliver an apology was just wrong against any basic ethical judgment and against any practical judgment, really, because you can't and you couldn't dispute the historical record that had been there in the bringing them home the report, the documentary history of the ripping apart of Aboriginal families across the entire country over nearly a century, frankly defied any attempt retrospectively to justify it. So for those reasons, I simply judged it was high time. I committed to it prior to the 2007 general election. It's the first thing I did in Parliament as Prime Minister, and I'm glad that we did. I believe it has helped overall in the long process of reconciliation between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians.
During your appointment as Prime Minister, were there other changes made in consultation with the Bringing Them Home report?
Yeah, the big one was how we went about closing the gap. I listened very hard to Aboriginal leaders at the time. They told me very plainly that an apology is one thing. Doing things to close the gap between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal Australians, that was actually the meat in the sandwich. That was the core business. And so I was very clear in the national apology that this had to be followed by action. And that action was the closing the gap strategy. It had two or three parts to it. One was making it plain that we had targets to deliver within concrete timelines for closing the gap in Indigenous health, education, employment, housing, longevity, and for that to be entrenched in black and white in formal statements to the Parliament. Secondly, we had to get the states and territories on side, and that, as you know, in the great history of our country, can sometimes be a bloody difficult thing to do. But I convened the premiers and chief ministers in Darwin at the end of that year and got them to agree to a national closing the gap strategy, again based in those clear measures concerning Aboriginal well-being. And then thirdly, of course, it's the report card. And I'm glad to say that 8 years on, subsequent prime ministers have been obliged to report to the Parliament each year through a formal report on progress and, where necessary, non-progress in bringing about a narrowing in the disadvantage suffered by Aboriginal Australians compared with the rest of the community.
There has been a narrowing, but there's also, you know, a lot of issues. And I think the response to Prime Minister Turnbull's report on closing the gap has left a hefty response from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community members. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll be making my own statement on these questions. And as I've done consistently both during my period in office and since leaving office, I've returned to Australia specifically from the United States, where I now live and work, in order to do this. So I'll be reflecting then on where I think progress has been made and where there has been regression or where there has been non-progress. The bottom line is I believe we should celebrate our achievements where they occur, and Indigenous Australians have been doing fantastic things. And we need to honour their achievements and honour the successes and celebrate the successes where they exist. And at the same time, be equally brutally honest and frank about where it's not working. I believe, and I said this on the day that I delivered the apology, we need to have a warts and all national statement each year about what's going right and what's going wrong, and then have the guts to change course where it's necessary. So I'm glad we still have a national report card, a national statement each year. It brings the country's focus to bear on these questions formally each year. Because prior to that, you know, people used to just kind of sweep it under the carpet, push it to one side, say there wasn't enough data, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I think that was a cop-out, and that's why we put the data together, and I think the data tells a story.
Yeah, there's plenty of data. Going back to the national apology, why February and not May 13 for Sorry Day?
Because I made a decision that was the first thing I wanted to do in the new parliament of the new government. And that, for me, contained a fundamental symbolic significance, which is we could not proceed with the rest of, quote, the normal business, unquote, of the nation until we dealt with this most fundamental act of injustice towards Aboriginal people. And so that's why we made it our first parliamentary priority. It was also the year in which we introduced for the first time Aboriginal Indigenous ceremony into the formal openings of the Parliament. I wanted to make sure that this was a new period. And since then, I think the incorporation of Aboriginal ceremonial into the affairs of our National Parliament has been a good thing. It's part and parcel of a long process. And compared with, I think, the attitudes of my parliamentary predecessor on these questions, represented a fairly big step forward.
Mr. Rudd, on May 13, on Sorry Day, there doesn't seem to be much inclusion in the media to understand the sorry, and more so, there's more attention made on the anniversary of the National Apology. Because, as you'd know, elders like Dr. Loadra O'Donoghue tried for years to have the date of January 26 changed to Sorry Day, and the May date was given. Do you think a shift in Australia's conscience could be made in having the date changed for January 26?
I think we're in a state of our development as a nation where we can have a number of national commemorations. The arrival of Whitefellas here is one of them, and I speak as the, I think, seventh or eighth generation descendant of a convict who probably didn't want to come here in the first place. So there's part of that in our history, but I believe important other national celebrations, commemorations, such as Sorry Day, such as the commemoration in February associated with the National Apology, including NAIDOC Week. These are all points at which we bring the issues and concerns and the realities of Indigenous Australia to full public consciousness. And that's what we need. This is a long process, ups and downs. And let me tell you, going backwards is always possible in this business. So you've got to use every single public occasion to keep hauling the process forward. And in my period in office, that's what I sought to do. But we need to do it on multiple fronts, on multiple days, on multiple ceremonials each year.
You're listening to SBS Radio Living Black. I'm Kirsten Lindsay, and I'm speaking with former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd on the 8th anniversary of the National Apology for the Stolen Generations. I've been speaking to Mr. Rudd about his decision to make the apology and some of the issues around January 26 and Sorry Day. And now we're going to speak about reparation packages for members of the Stolen Generations and their families. Speaking of process, at the time of the apology that you gave, there wasn't a space at that time for reparation packages for members of the Stolen Generations. And you did say it wasn't off the table. Why couldn't reparation be given at the time?
Well, if you look carefully at what I said prior to the 2013 election, where I had returned to the office of Prime Minister, I said then it was time to look at this again. I think the history books record I didn't win the 2013 election, and as a result, I am not Prime Minister. In fact, a lot of water has gone under the bridge since then.
Yeah.
But I believe that after bedding down the apology, bedding down the process of closing the gap, it was important to move on to that next step, and that's why I brought it to the public debate at the end of 2013. And I believe it remains a core issue on the national agenda as well.
So currently, Richard Weston from the Healing Foundation is pushing for a reparation package scheme in New South Wales in the wake of the New South Wales government's response to the Bringing Them Home report for their inquiry. He wants it to follow suit from South Australia. Would you support that?
I'm not familiar with the details of what he's put forward. What I do recommend is a national process for looking at how we deal with the compensation for the lives affected. That's what I said was an issue to be considered in the subsequent parliament had I been returned to office. I wasn't. I'm therefore consistent with the position I took at the end of 2013. We need to look through that carefully, and we need a national process by which this can be properly analysed and properly concluded. The truth is, when you run into, as I do often, the Stolen Generation themselves and their children, the lasting scars of the experience of being ripped apart from your families are huge. They are, in some respects, indelible. And so it is unfinished business from my point of view.
Currently in Canberra, the Grandmothers Against Removals of Children are having a national meeting in commemoration of the 8th year since the National Apology. And as you'd know, in New South Wales, Family and Children Services have agreed on working with a guiding principles module that the Grandmothers Against Removals are trying to bring through other states throughout Australia. Is that something that you could support to come through in Queensland?
Well, I live currently in the United States, so I'm very careful.
Oh, okay.
I'm very careful I'm now president of the Asia Society in New York. As you may recall, I've got some experience with China. I'm doing a whole lot of work there.
Yeah.
President of the Asia Society Policy Institute. And prior to that, I was at the Harvard Kennedy School working on China-US relations for the previous year.
Yeah.
So I'm very careful about entering into, shall I say, the detail of what individual groups are proposing within the Australian national political debate on particular programs to deal with Indigenous disadvantage. What I would say about the group of grandmothers that you've just referred to is all power to their arm. I believe that their continued search for justice on this is something we should all get behind. But I go back to my earlier point, this should be wrapped into a national process to look at the best ways and means by which the outstanding and unfinished business concerned with the Stolen Generations can be dealt with.